It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
When you read these 302s, this is a rather anemic crime that borders on the pathetic. I mean, he gets a call on vacation. He talks to this Russian ambassador. None of that was particularly strange or unprecedented and certainly not unlawful.
That was Jonathan Turley just in a statement after General Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, yesterday went into the court with Emmett Sullivan. We talked a great deal about it yesterday, and I have to tell you that what happened in that courtroom was heart-wrenching, absolutely heart-wrenching. I have an email from a friend of mine. She said, what a horrific error. The sentencing judge accused Flynn of selling out your country. But he misunderstood the dates that of Flynn doing work in Turkey and his becoming a member of the administration. But the damning words already spread around the world, painting Flynn as a traitor. It's grotesque. And I think she's right about that. Catherine Herridge kind of gives us more detail. Let's listen. Clip 4.
President Trump's former national security advisor Mike Flynn arrived with his wife by his side and his legal team. On multiple occasions, federal judge Emmett Sullivan pressed Flynn and his lawyers on whether he wanted to withdraw his guilty plea of lying to federal agents or challenge the circumstances surrounding the January 2017 FBI interview. Flynn was discouraged from having a lawyer present and not formally warned that false statements could be prosecuted. A critical moment came when Flynn told the court that he knew when the FBI asked him about the Russian ambassador and in December 2016 conversation about sanctions that his lies would be criminal and punishable. The judge responded, I can't hide my disgust, my disdain for your criminal offense. Not only did you lie to the FBI, you lied to senior officials in the incoming administration. He then asked, are you continuing to accept responsibility for his false statements? Flynn replied, I am, Your Honor. The judge seemed to chastise Flynn for making false statements in the West Wing, including lies about the conversation to members of the Trump transition team and the vice president and FBI. You sold out your country, the judge added. Sullivan also questioned the basis of the case, asking the special counsel's lawyer whether the Flynn phone call with the Russian ambassador was criminal. After a long pause, the government lawyer said it might be a violation of the Logan Act, to which the judge seemed to laugh, suggesting no one had ever been charged with that law. Criminalizing unauthorized contact by U.S. officials with foreign governments. President Trump tweeted good luck to Flynn before the sentencing, and his aides slammed Flynn's treatment by the FBI.
That he was certainly ambushed and that the FBI that we know had clear political bias. We've seen that time and time again.
Legal experts say a 3-month delay may help all sides.
I think there was just simply a pause today. The judge wanted to be sure that the defendant was pleading guilty because, in fact, he was guilty.
Judge Sullivan sought to clarify some of his actions today, telling the court at no point were his questions meant to suggest Flynn committed treason. The special counsel lawyers said they have no reason to believe Flynn committed treason at all.
Well, that was a truncated version, of course. Sandy Rios back with you. If as much as I can, I'll try to make this as clear as I think I can. Judge Emmett Sullivan, of course, we talked a great deal about it. We thought perhaps that this judge would go after Robert Mueller and the methods that the FBI used to really, what would you call it? Set him up. I don't know what else to say. Andrew McCabe told him he could have an attorney, but if he did that, he would have to call the Justice Department and it would, you know, it would be kind of. And so General Flynn, because they had developed a pretty good relationship, said, oh, no, don't worry about that. And they had a real friendly conversation. The agents described how he's relaxed, and they said they wanted him to be relaxed. They didn't want him to be warned about what they were about to try to do. And they had a transcript of his conversation with Ambassador Kislyak. And by the way, could I please say again, there was nothing wrong with the incoming National Security Advisor having a conversation with the Russian ambassador. General Flynn was on vacation at the time. The agents, when the ambassador called him, and, you know, isn't it amazing that even though that conversation was leaked to the press, we still don't know what it was? I would imagine if we really saw the transcript of what General Flynn said to Ambassador Kislyak, it would be so vanilla. Otherwise, they would have published it. I guarantee you they would have published it. It was a crime to leak it, and we still don't know who leaked it. All right, so the judge comes in, and we think he's going to take into account all the things that have come to light lately about how the FBI really set General Flynn up in this, sending two agents to the White House. And could I reiterate that those two agents, both of them, even Peter Strzok, said they did not think Flynn had lied in their interaction. I was reading little parts of excerpts from it, and they were asking details about his conversation with Kislyak, and he said, I can't remember that part. And then they said, they sort of filled in a blank. He says, oh yeah, that helps. Thanks for helping me remember. And it's so innocuous. It's just absolutely stunning, but I want to continue here. So Sullivan said, in the courtroom, he cannot hide his disgust and disdain with General Flynn's crimes. And he said basically this: you were an unregistered agent of a foreign country while serving as the national security advisor to the president. And that's not true. And could I please remind the judge that Turkey has been our ally? They are part of NATO. They've been good allies to us for decades. It's only in the last, I would say, 10 years, maybe not even 10, that the president, Erdogan, of Turkey has moved toward an Islamic state. Before that, they wanted to join the European Union because they've been so Western. They are not our declared enemies. Islamist, yes, but that's only been happening the last few years. So there's nothing illegal, immoral, or fattening about General Flynn doing business with the Turks, and he stopped that before he went into the White House. The judge was just wrong. And so they had a recess, and the judge comes back out and basically kind of apologizes, and he says, I felt terrible about that, he said of his statement. But as my friend said, but it's already gone out all over the world that General Flynn is a traitor? This decorated war hero, I'm not sure it could get any worse. He's not going to be sentenced until March. And the judge was threatening him, saying, I'm going to incarcerate you, basically, is what he said to him. We don't know if he'll do that in 3 months, because maybe if he realizes what a fool he made of himself yesterday, he'll back it up. But I don't know. I want you to hear what other people are saying about this. Byron York was on the panel last night in Fox, and Byron's been following this in such great detail. I wanted you to hear what he had to say. Byron York.
Well, it was a weird day, and it was a bad day for Michael Flynn. He goes into court thinking that it's basically a formality. The prosecutor has recommended no time in jail for him. Have a little meeting, say you're guilty again, walk out, no time in prison, move on with your life. Before it was over, the judge had raised this question over whether Flynn had committed treason, which was outrageous, especially coming from a federal judge on the bench, had suggested maybe Flynn had sold out his country and that he was an unregistered foreign agent inside the White House, which he was not.
Isn't he talking about the allegations about the ties to Turkey and all of
the dealings? Well, a judge can bring up uncharged conduct in a sentencing case, but really to suggest that he was an unregistered foreign agent in the White House was false, because even the prosecutor, I believe, corrected the judge to say that had ended before. So by the end of the day, it was this weird situation in which all these things had been raised. It was almost like the craziness of the whole Trump debate moved into the courtroom for a day, and Michael Flynn's future is completely uncertain now. I got the impression reading the 302s that whether prosecuting Flynn was a judgment call, looking at that. And the FBI and the Justice Department made one judgment to begin with up until about May of 2017, which was not to prosecute them. And then after Mueller, that's pre-Mueller, post-Mueller, wham, he's pleading guilty by December of that year.
All right, so that's Byron York, and I want to move on. The Wall Street Journal has a really interesting piece on this. We'll put this on our Facebook page because it covers a lot of the different points. It's called The Flynn Fiasco. Well, that was bizarre. We're referring to the fiasco Tuesday, what was supposed to be the sentencing of Michael Flynn. That sentencing was postponed until next year, but not before federal judge Emmett Sullivan damaged his own reputation with an extraordinary public attack on the former national security advisor for a crime he's not been charged with or admitted to. And then they go on to track Emmett Sullivan's pronouncements, which I've read to you already. Mr. Mueller had never charged Mr. Flynn with violating, that's the foreign agent registration, whatever it is, where you're working with a foreign government, you're supposed to register. And the Wall Street Journal goes on to say that FARA, that's that statute that says you have to register as a foreign agent, outburst does shed some more light on Mueller's methods and Flynn's guilty plea. FARA is a musty 1938 statute that requires agents of a foreign government or principals to disclose their activities. Mr. Mueller has resurrected FARA from the nearly dead to squeeze people in the Trump circle. Mr. Flynn's work for Turkey included urging the U.S. government to extradite cleric Fethullah Gulen to the tender mercies of Turkish justice. And they say this was sleazy work but not illegal. But could I please interject? I haven't talked about Fethullah Gulen, I don't think, since I've been doing this particular show, but according to people that I know, he lives in Pennsylvania, has a huge compound, and he is very much an Islamist who exports his stuff through school curriculum. He's very involved in these STEM programs in school, so he is a very concerning person, even if he's not the Islamist that Erdogan is. But they're enemies. They're just, you know, enemies of different stripes. It's not necessarily a bad thing to get Fethullah Gulen out of this country. So I just need to interject that because you probably won't hear that anywhere else. Mr. Flynn apparently failed to register under FARA, which would be a crime. And then he said, they go on to say, I think it's Jonathan Turley who points out that Tony Podesta, who's the brother of John Podesta, did the exact same thing, lobbying for the exact same country. And he's residing comfortably in his home in Washington, D.C., just down the street from Barack Obama. So you see how this works. And just to make it drive it home even more, Martha McCallum talked to former Attorney General Mike Mukasey. I want you to hear what that exchange was like. Clip one.
Joining me now, thanks. Judge Michael Mukasey, former Attorney General under President George W. Bush. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
This evening. You know, I want to go back to the topic that I brought up in the intro with regard to Michael Flynn and the judge. What a difference a day makes. I mean, everybody believed that this was going to be zero sentence. This judge had a lot to say. What did you make of it?
What I made of it was that it was just bizarre in my experience. There was only one judge that I ever saw do things like that, and he was in the Southern District of New York and was known to be off his rocker. Judges are generally restrained in their comments. Generally, they don't take on either defendants or lawyers in that fashion because it's not a fair fight, and everybody knows that instinctively. He suggested that Flynn was guilty of treason and backed off that. He suggested that he was an unregistered agent while in the White House and backed off that.
Those are two facts that he just simply was wrong on when he was berating him, which seems very unusual. I just want to mention that we just got some information that Michael Flynn has been asked to surrender his passport and not to leave the area of a 50-mile circumference around Washington, D.C. Your thoughts on that?
That's the kind of precaution that's usually taken with somebody who's a risk of flight. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that was done at the behest of the government or simply by the judge spontaneously. But again, it suggests an over-the-top approach to this case.
And that's the former Attorney General of the United States, another one of them. I mean, I think that it's unanimous that something really went awry. My opinion about it is that Emmett Sullivan is probably like many people. He's uninformed. He thinks he knows. He's had his mind bent by whatever information he's taking in, and it has been that General Flynn is a traitor, he says. Completely ignorant of the facts that could not be further from the truth. And so he lambasted him. Sounds like he was prepared to sentence him to something, I don't know what, but they decided to delay the sentencing because they're going to just do it in March because allegedly he's cooperating more with the special counsel about what, I do not know. I think it's related to Turkey, and we'll be hearing more about that, but this is a tragedy. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Our concern about 13 Reasons Why has not diminished. If you've signed the AFA petition to Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, then you've probably heard the story of Anna Bright, who killed herself after binge-watching the show. But did you know she wasn't the first, nor the last? Other young people have been influenced by this program and have taken their own lives. Netflix says they want to stimulate conversations about taboo topics like teen suicide, but they still refuse to have a conversation with the American Family Association about the dangers of their show. Please pray that God will change Mr. Hastings' mind so that he pulls 13 Reasons Why before another life is lost. Look for the AFA action alerts with information you can email and share on social media so that others can sign the petition too by visiting afa.net. Every vulnerable teen is another reason why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Remember when Starbucks announced they would open their bathrooms to all comers, no matter if they were customers? Well, their policy is working out as all of us right-thinking people thought it would. It's a colossal mess. In Seattle, drug addicts are using Starbucks bathrooms as a place to dispose of hypodermic needles. Television station KIRO reports it's so bad in some stores that workers have had to take antiviral medications to protect themselves from HIV and hepatitis. Bathrooms in New York City Starbucks have been overrun by vagrants and the homeless. Conditions are so bad in some stores, the bathrooms have been locked down and barricaded. The open store policy came about after two black men were arrested for refusing to leave a Philadelphia Starbucks. And while the coffee chain says they don't want their stores to become public bathrooms, that's exactly what they become. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Yeah, we had bad news about General Flynn. I don't even know what to say to you about it. The one redeeming thing to me is that the sentencing will not now take place until March, and maybe Judge Sullivan will be so shamed, and he should be, that he'll go overboard to make it right. I pray that he does. And so that's the story on General Flynn. But, of course, the other disappointing thing to many of us is that President Trump laying down the line over the border wall. I played for you that entire exchange between Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi in the Oval Office last week, because I thought President Trump did a beautiful job of trying to negotiate with them and to say, I'm willing to shut down the government in order to provide a border wall. Well, now we're hearing that things are shifting. But before I introduce our guest, I want to just give you an idea of the hypocrisy here. On Tuesday, Nancy Pelosi, the incoming Speaker of the House, we think, told reporters that we'll see if negotiations with the White House make any progress. And she said the wall is not about money, but rather about morality. It's the wrong thing to do. It doesn't work. It's not effective. It's the wrong thing to do, and it's a waste of money. But let me just point out to you that back in 2008, she was whistling a different tune. Let's listen.
Different issues. We're talking about, do we have a commitment to secure the border? Yes. What are the options that we have available to us? Let's make sure they work. Because we do, while we need to address the issue of immigration and the challenge we have of undocumented people in our country, we certainly don't want any more coming in.
Laugh track. Okay, then Chuck Schumer, of course, who's now saying we can't negotiate with the president. You know, we can't give them that billion dollar slush fund. And how immoral this wall is. Sang a different tune himself in 2009. Let's listen.
The first of these seven principles is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. It's plain and simple and unavoidable. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it. Above all else, the American people want their government to be serious about protecting the public, enforcing the rule of law, and creating a rational system of legal immigration that will proactively fit our needs rather than reactively responding to future waves of illegal immigration. People who enter the United States without our permission.
He goes on and on. It's more of the same. I mean, it's stunning. It is absolutely stunning. Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, she's the Director of Governmental Affairs there, follows this more closely than almost anyone I know, knows the ins and outs of what's happening in Congress. So I ask her to join us this morning. Rosemary, good morning, and thank you for making time for us today.
Good morning, Sandy. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
All right. So I did not really give details of what's happening this morning. So why don't you tell us what's happening right now?
Well, that's a good question, because it appears that no one in Congress actually knows what's happening. The House is supposed to reconvene tonight and apparently be here through the rest of the week. They do not have a plan to move forward on the end-of-year spending plan. Apparently, the House leadership is waiting for the Senate to act, which is interesting considering that the Constitution directs the House to start the appropriations process. And the Senate hasn't agreed on what it's going to do, so nobody actually knows what's going to happen, but there is increasing likelihood that the president will not get his money for the wall. He will not get the policy changes that he needs to address the caravans. And we will go into the new Democratic House in the next Congress with absolutely nothing having been done.
You know, Rosemary, it's just breathtaking. It's what I see, at least my impression from a distance here and not being down there with them all the time as you are, is that the Republican leadership, especially in the House, especially Paul Ryan and his cadre, and Kevin McCarthy, supposed to be taking over after Paul Ryan, are just unwilling to do anything. They have completely abdicated. This is not the first time. It's a pattern. And that Mitch McConnell isn't too much. He's only a shade different. And so now we have the bullies, the people that are pushing the American people against their will. We have Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer actually leading. They're actually leading when they should be following. I think that's just stunning. We have to mark that once again.
Yeah, so, you know, it's very interesting to me because the members of the House Freedom Caucus have presented two amendments that they want to be attached to whatever spending bill is passed. The first amendment is $5 billion for the wall. The second amendment does all of the critical emergency policy changes that have to be done to address the caravan. So it's asylum reform, it addresses unaccompanied alien children, and it changes the detention policy so that families can be detained together for more than 20 days. That's all. It's a very narrow targeted approach. And the Republican leadership in the House says, well, you know, we can't do that because we can't count on the Freedom Caucus to vote for these appropriations bills. So we have to turn to the Democrats. Well, the whole reason that the Freedom Caucus presented these amendments was to say, if you do this, if you do the right thing on immigration, we will vote for your big, ugly appropriations bills. And yet leadership ignores that and turns to the Democrats.
There must be a lot of personal rancor over Jim Jordan challenging Kevin McCarthy and the factions. I'm guessing the lines have drawn even more starkly. So now we see the difference. Honestly, Rosemary, I was just thinking as you said that, if a Jim Jordan were the incoming speaker, if God had willed that to happen and we could have reaped that benefit, you see the difference right here with this. Just a piece of legislation that makes sense, that addresses this problem as opposed to someone who's absent or a leadership base that's just absolutely absent. You know, I was just reading this morning, Gallup did just released a poll, which you probably know. I don't know the details of it other than to say they ask what the number one problem is that we're facing in this country. And the number one was listed as government, and the number two was listed as immigration. What's your sense of that right now? I know there are lots of polls that can ask questions in different ways, but do you think the American people are on the side of this worthless Congress and Republican leadership? Because they always say that people don't want a wall.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely not true that the American public is with the Kevin McCarthy's as opposed to the Jim Jordan. Every poll that we at Numbers USA have done shows that a majority of Americans want immigration, legal immigration, reduced. They want illegal immigration stopped. They want mandatory E-Verify. They want border security. They want, you know, all of the common sense reforms that should have been in place decades ago.
It's really stunning. It really is. I mean, how long have we been fighting this? Really, I remember the first time I really engaged in this was when Bush was in office. And they did this big push, you know, for amnesty. And the American people rose up and people just fought back. And it looked like they were going to pass this massive amnesty. And we were able to oppose that successfully. And now, Rosemary, it's like, no matter how much we oppose it, we just cannot seem to get any traction. Let's talk about President Trump. Now, he's talking, as you know, about supplementing the $1.8 billion, I think it is, that the Democrats, they're so generous, are saying they'll give him, but not for building the wall. Not for building the wall, just $1.8 for whatever. I think, repairing current fences and things?
It's $1.6 million for repairing current fences and maintaining the levees and all that kind of thing.
Okay. So they're so generous. So he is talking, as you know, about the president is talking now about finding money elsewhere. Aside from the fact that that's, I think, a great idea, is that a good thing? Is that a good answer to this anecdote, to this lame, impotent congressional leadership?
You know, I don't know why the president changed his tune so suddenly. I mean, you know, last week he was hardcore. I need $5 billion for the wall, period, the end. We'll shut down the government. And then all of a sudden he backs off and says, well, you know, okay, send me what you can kind of thing. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know if, you know, someone, Kevin McCarthy, someone else came in and said, oh, this is just too much for us. We just can't do it. It's not going to happen. And he said, okay. Or if, you know, one of his advisors has told him there's no way to get this passed. I just don't know. I don't understand it because, you know, this has been the place to fight since Trump got elected, since he was elected on this issue. And yet we never seem to have the fight. We keep being promised, well, next time we'll do it. Next time we'll have it. And it never happens. And it's just amazing. This is the security of our nation we're talking about, and it never happens.
You know, I find myself wondering, I always see Mitch McConnell's hands in this because he seems to have a sway with the president. I mean, who would have thought? But he seems to be able to have a pretty big voice when it comes to what goes on in the Senate. He kind of insists on having it. And, you know, this is really, really speculation, but you wonder if something like, you know, McConnell did not want to call for the criminal justice reform bill to be voted on. And he ended up calling for it. And I haven't talked about that in the show this morning yet, but that's another disappointment. It passed overwhelmingly in the Senate because Mitch McConnell did allow it to come up for a vote. And I wonder, you know, you wonder if it's a trade-off. Don't shut the government down because it will make me look bad, Mr. President, and all the senators. And in exchange, I'll have a vote here for it. This is the way things work, I think, sometimes. And I wonder if it's not something like that.
It's entirely possible. And, you know, the sad thing is, if the process had proceeded as it should, with the House coming up with the appropriations bills, I mean, first of all, this should have all been done months ago with each individual appropriations bill being debated and passed and sent to the Senate and then the Senate voting on them. But of course, that hasn't happened in years now because of the dysfunctional leadership in Congress. But if the House right now were to pass the appropriations package with the wall funding, with the asylum reform and so on, and send it to the Senate and leave town, then it becomes Chuck Schumer's shutdown. You know, if the Senate can't pass it, it's Chuck Schumer's shutdown. So Republicans don't have to take responsibility, but they're so scared of their own shadow when it comes to government shutdown that, you know, it's just avoid at all costs. And Unfortunately, the cost is the American taxpayers with illegal immigration.
And the one thing we have to say is the stupidity of constantly saying, we're not going to shut down, we're not going to shut down, when that's the only leverage they have to get the Democrats to vote the right way on this. Now, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, or Nancy especially, keep saying that there aren't enough votes in the House to pass funding for the wall. What do you think about that, Rosemary? As you assess the numbers there, would there have been enough? Is there enough? Are there enough votes to pass a bill with the wall funding in it, the $5
billion? Well, assuming that all of the Republicans who lost or are retiring come back for the vote, then yes, I think there are plenty of votes. There are, remember though, some Republicans who tend to vote with the Democrats on immigration, but I don't think that there are enough of those to prevent very simple, straightforward, common sense legislation like $5 billion for the wall.
Well, all right, well, back to my question a few minutes ago. Do you think that it is of any comfort to us that the president would find this money elsewhere and go ahead and build that wall in spite of Congress?
I don't know where he's thinking about getting it. There are certainly other pots of money within DHS. There are pots of money at the Pentagon. He certainly could order the military to build the fence. I mean, that would be, a straightforward defending the nation kind of thing for the military to do. He, of course, will be challenged by the Democrats in the upcoming Congress for anything he does, for any dime that he spends that is not in a, you know, designated border wall pot of money. But he's going to be challenged for everything he does anyway. So why not?
Yeah. All right. So for today, with the uncertainty being what it is there anything that people can do, honestly?
Absolutely. Call Republican leadership in the House and the Senate and tell them that you want the two amendments that the House Freedom Caucus has proposed. You want those included in the appropriations package. And, you know, it's time to finally keep your promises to the Republicans.
Yeah. Well, I vote for that. I vote for that. Oh, by the way, Rosemary, I don't know if you saw it. Paul Ryan's been working on a video of himself, the story of Paul Ryan. I guess that's why he's been too busy to actually do his job. And it's just coming out. So there's a whole series. And so how wonderful. We'll see a video and presentation of the Speaker Paul Ryan. And the part about what he did in Congress will be short, I've been thinking. But anyway, pardon me. Rosemary, have a wonderful day. And listen, you're such a warrior on this issue. And I want to help you in any way I can because it's for the good of the country. Thanks for your help. Numbers USA, Rosemary Jenks. Be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Supreme Court declined to review lower court rulings that prevented two states from ending public funding for Planned Parenthood. Conservative Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito voted in favor of taking up the challenge, but John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh voted against, depriving their colleagues of the four votes required to review the cases. When regressives savaged Kavanaugh with all manner of slanderous accusations during his confirmation, it was largely the pro-life community who rallied to his defense. Yet in this instance, he refused to stand with pro-lifers and defend the Constitution.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. President Trump is receiving more incoming at one time than almost any president before him. The Democrats are united in their hatred for him, as are almost the entire media. People in his own administration are trying to sabotage him, terminate his presidency, and send him to prison. He's a bit like Samson. Samson fooled around with women, not his wife, and thought the source of his strength was his hair rather than God. At the end of his life, Samson called out to God, "O Lord God, please remember and strengthen me only this once." God answered his prayer and worked a great victory. Let's pray that President Trump will find his strength in God and not in himself. If he does, he will bear up under the load. If he does not, the load will crush him.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, "Lord, please be with us."
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, the U.S. Senate placed a massive bet on a long shot, voting overwhelmingly that increasing the number of convicted felons at large in America will make the nation safer. The Bipartisan First Step Act authorizes early release and reduced sentences for convicts, including some who perpetrated violent crimes and/or engaged in inherently violent activity like trafficking lethal drugs. With senators voting 87-12 in favor of this bill, it is virtually certain to be swiftly rubber-stamped by the House of Representatives as well. I pray it will all work out as promised by the criminal justice reformers. Unfortunately, there is plenty of reason already to believe that this bet won't pay off for law and order and for the society it preserves. Worse yet, the politicians who are placing it are not just playing with our money, they're betting our lives. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Sandy Rios back with you, and of course that is, believe it or not, from Handel's Messiah. Well, it's not exactly the same, but it's based on scripture, the book of Isaiah. It's just, every valley shall be exalted and every hill shall be made plain, and the rough places plain. It's just amazing. Everything will be, the wrong will be made right when the Redeemer, the King, comes back. And I talked about that a bit yesterday. You know, there was such bad news yesterday. For me to tell you that I get affected by it. I can hardly stand it sometimes. And one of those days was yesterday. Very hard. It's just like a number of blows. My husband and I were talking about it, how it does seem that that the more we go on with this, the less we feel connected to this world and all the things that we're seeing around it. It's just hard to watch. It's hard to watch the injustice. I think that's the thing that just breaks my heart. I can't stand to see injustice everywhere. And based on lies, and then a bandwagon, and the joy of seeing people destroyed is the glee, and the fact that, of course, just as the psalmist said, why do the wicked prosper? But the thing that came to me as I was praying yesterday was an old hymn, and I bet some of you will remember it's based on a verse in the book of Job. And of course, Job had gone through so much, lost everything really except his nagging wife. Lost his children, lost his health, lost all of his wealth, lost everything. And then his so-called friends came to comfort him, and they didn't. They made him feel worse. And he just said, basically, though he slay me, meaning God, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And then he breaks out into this rejoicing piece of, in the midst of his trouble, he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, or after my skin worms destroy this body, this I know, that in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, not as a stranger, but as a friend. And that's from Job. And then, of course, the old hymn is, I know that my Redeemer liveth, and on the earth again shall stand. I know eternal life he giveth, that grace and power are in his hand. And remember the chorus, I know that Jesus liveth, and on the earth again shall stand. I know that life he giveth, that grace and power are in his hand. That was on my heart yesterday all day, because as I was reviewing all these blows, really, it does not make me not trust God. It doesn't. It makes me wish he would involve himself the way I think it should go. How I wish he would intervene, that we would see some sort of justice. And it's hard to watch that. But that does not mean for a second that I do not believe in his almighty power. I've experienced it in my life way too much to doubt him in situations like this. And that's why I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand on the last day on the earth. I know he will. And I know that all of this is part of this process, this groaning that we must go through before he comes again. So, I have to say to you, that doesn't mean that we don't fight. Man, we have to stand up for the truth. We have to speak the truth, and we have to fight while we can. There will come a time when we can't. I mean, there will come a time when there will be nothing, no recourse, no legal recourse to stop this or to do what we do on radio. I don't know if it'll be in our lifetimes, but it might be. And so while we can, we speak, we share, we speak the truth, understanding that God really is in control, and I'm not a Calvinist, so that's not what I'm talking about. God knows nothing is happening that's surprising him, nothing that we're seeing here in terms of the nature of man, his lies, when people get too much control, how they punish people they don't like, that hasn't changed. Human nature has stayed the same. So I'm just saying, get discouraged, but not eternally discouraged, because I always think of the verses that I studied so faithfully in some of my most despondent days, that we trust in God. We hope in God. And why? Over and over, it's paired with trust in God because of his unfailing love. His unfailing love. It is in his character to love us. He is unfailing in his love. He's a loving God. He cares for his children, and we are his children, those of us that have come to him through his son, Jesus, and asked for forgiveness. We are his precious ones. We're set apart, And he has unfailing love for us. And so when you don't have much hope on what you're seeing here, trust God in his unfailing love, and we'll see how this thing plays out. So now more bad news. So yesterday the criminal justice reform bill passed 87-2. The bill that didn't have any sponsors couldn't get any. That senators, Republican senators, were expressing doubts about, suddenly they had no doubts. And the bill passed 87-12. Tom Cotton, Senator Cotton's, he joined us on Monday to talk about his three amendments that would have, Cotton and Kennedy, Senator Kennedy as well, three different provisions, amendments that would have improved the bill, including eliminating a lot of criminals who have really horrible crimes on their resume from getting early release. But all that failed. And so I don't know what to say about that. The president is happy about this. He says, and remember, his son-in-law has been pushing this. He's really been the brain thrust behind this. America is the greatest country in the world, and my job is to fight for all citizens, even those who have made mistakes. This will keep our community safer and provide hope and a second chance to those who earn it. I look forward to signing this law. So it was passed, and a lot of factions, a lot of other groups in the Christian community will be happy about that. AFA was opposed to this, and I stand with that. I don't think this is a good bill. And the only thing that we can just pray is that God will use this in ways we can't see. And he can certainly do that. So we pray for the best possible outcome. We know that something like 58,000 criminals will be released. I think that's what the CBO scored it as just this last week. And so it's good, I guess, for their families and for the criminals. Might not be so good for Americans, but here we go. And the other thing that's tragic about this is the Senate, look how they jumped on this. They can't pass funding for border wall, and they can't seem to do anything else, and they can't fight the Democrats on this horrible funding bills that they've been passing. But they can. Mitch McConnell can whip people into line when he wants to. And all of them can change their minds and vote for things when they think there's some sort of a carrot and stick thing. I don't know what their carrot is. I really don't. But they passed it. And so the president's going to sign. Well, the House has to vote for it. And I'm sure I don't know how that's going to play out. As you heard Rosemary say, they're coming back tonight. And so we'll see. I think they will certainly support it. I have no reason to believe, at least the majority will. With the Democrats and some Republicans, that's the way it's going to go. There was another part to what happened yesterday with James Comey and the Flynn situation, and there's an overlap, although the two are not exactly the same. I want to point to some text messages that were made public. This is an isolated piece of paper, and so I wish I could tell you. I believe this is the struck page texts, but I see screenshots of them, but it doesn't say the names. But this is the text. These are from FBI personnel, that much I'm sure. May 10th, 2017, text message. We need to lock in Flynn in a formal, chargeable way soon. And the person answering says, I agree. I've been pushing and I'll reemphasize with Bill. It has to be Bill Priestap, who was, I think, the man in charge of legal things for the FBI. I can't think of his official title. Now, so that was May 10th when that text message was sent. We need to lock in Flynn in a formal, chargeable way soon. I agree. I've been pushing, and I'll reemphasize with Bill. May 17th, Robert Mueller is assigned. May 31st, the Flynn 302 is edited by somebody. That's the notes that the FBI agents that interrogated him wrote. It's edited and reentered right after Mueller is assigned. So that's the egregious stuff we're dealing with here. So Catherine Herridge had some stuff to say about it last night. Honestly, I can't remember what she did say, so let's listen.
There are a lot of nuggets in the Comey transcript on Flynn House Republicans Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows press Comey on why he didn't warn the president there may be a national security risk. Quote, Meadows, you were so concerned that Michael Flynn may have lied or did lie to the vice president of the United States. but that once you got that confirmed, you didn't believe that it was appropriate to tell the president of the United States. Mr. Comey, that is correct. We had an open investigation, criminal investigation, counterintelligence investigation, he added. There was no way I would discuss that with the president. That's significant because the FBI director really has two hats. One is building cases for prosecution, and another is bearing a responsibility to warn if a government official poses a security threat. It's not clear from the transcript, Brett, why Comey chose that course of action here.
All right, so that's Catherine's report. Just to remind you of a few other details about the Flynn situation, and also then now as it loops with James Comey, former FBI director, man of impeccable character and truth and honesty and integrity. The Washington Post early on published, actually one day before General Flynn's White House interview with agents, citing FBI sources, publicly revealed that the FBI had wiretapped Flynn's calls and cleared him of any criminal conduct. All right, let that set in for a second. The Washington Post obviously got a hold of information they shouldn't have had. I'm not sure how they got it, but they got it. We never did solve those leaking problems, did we? Except we did some of them, because the head of the intelligence gathering data in the Senate Intelligence Committee was leaking to his lover, his lover who was 30 or 40 years younger than he. So we do know that, and he leaked over the series of many, many years, but they're kind of going easy on him because that's the way it goes. So the Washington Post somehow found out that the FBI had had General Flynn's conversation with Kislyak, the one that's so touted as, you know, according to the judge, treason. That's if you just tuned in, that's not treason. It's ridiculous, but... And the FBI had cleared him of any criminal conduct, but then the agents go in and they take care of that, I guess, because of that that text I told you about. We need to lock in Flynn in a former chargeable way soon. I agree. I've been pushing it, and I'll reemphasize with Bill. And so that's May 10th. May 17th, Mueller is assigned, and May 31st, the record of that meeting with those FBI agents, that interrogation, is altered, edited, they say, and reentered. And then now they pushed General Flynn into a position of admitting that he lied to the FBI. It sounds like it's a technicality. All right, so just some tidbits in here. So here's the behind-the-scenes interrogation of Comey yesterday that Catherine was referring to. The former FBI director confirmed that one of the agents he sent was a career counterintelligence agent. The other was Peter Strzok. Who's been fired now, of course. Comey denied he sent Strzok or handpicked the agents. I knew that the vice president was making statements that he attributed to conversations he's had with Mr. Flynn that were starkly at odds with those classified facts. So Trey Gowdy said, you knew exactly what General Flynn had to say to the Russian ambassador before you interviewed him. And Comey replied, yes. I'm only hesitating because I don't know what I don't know. Comey also said he had not discussed the Flynn interview with Trump. We had an open investigation, criminal, counterintelligence. There was no way I could discuss that with the president. Really? The president is over the Justice Department. He is Comey's boss. When push comes to shove, the president of the United States has a right to know just about everything. He is not supposed to influence investigations, but he does have a right to know. There's nothing shocking about that. Comey was the only FBI director we ever heard talk about trying to keep things from the president, his boss, his authority. So in one of these posts, Flynn actually thanked these FBI agents for reminding him of some of his things he said to Kislyak. He says, yes, good reminder. It's just an amazing story, a shameful story. We'll see what happens in March. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.